It was super emotional because you have multiple offers that most of the time are not identical. They're a little bit different. And you also have to think, okay, who is this buyer? Of course, you're talking on the phone a couple times, but you have to think about, okay, who is most likely to close? Because it's one thing to make an offer and sign an LOI.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
At Brand Builder Summit back in August, it was August, right? Yes, it was August. Joe, you brought somebody to me. You introduced me to somebody. We had dinner with him a couple of nights. And, you know, he's a client of ours. We've worked with him on multiple deals, but just a quiet guy, very, very nice, kind of understated, and, you know, didn't stand out to me too much, other than the fact that he was a client, of course, and I wanted to get to know him there. But it wasn't until lunch on, I think, the third day that we were there, and you told me a little bit about his backstory, which was a heart-wrenching, moving, inspiring, all those things in one. And you have him now on the podcast sharing a bit of that story.
I do. You know, he's really the American dream. I moved to this country 9 years ago, I think. Had a really, really tough upbringing. Could have gone down many different paths. He could have wound up in jail very easily. He dropped out of high school at the age of 15. Started, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, working construction, doing whatever he could. He's been self-employed more or less for the last 20 years. And even up to 3 or 4 years ago, was living month to month as an entrepreneur, right? Overnight success? Absolutely not. A long, long road. But we just closed a transaction that was nearly eight figures. And you would never know it unless you have an eye for picking out the guy that I think you told me, just pick out the worst dressed guy in the room and he's probably the best well off, right? Or he's got the most money. This particular gentleman, Ramon, he was very chill, very relaxed. People just talked to him, got along with him, and then heard his backstory and just blown away with what he's achieved. A few years ago, people wouldn't give him $5,000. Now they're just throwing money at him. Of course, he's not taking it because he's going to do this all on his own, but it's an incredible story, not just for the size of the transaction and what he's accomplished, but what he's overcome in life to get there.
Yeah. Well, let's get to it. It's a really good story.
Hey, folks, it's Joe Valley here from Quiet Light Brokerage. And today our guest is my friend and my client, Ramon Van Meer. Ramon, welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast.
Thank you so much, Joe, for having me.
It's good to have you here, man. You and I have been working together now for, gosh, almost 8 months, right? We started in January. I got that call from our mutual friend and former broker here at Quiet Light, Darren Hardin. He sold a smaller business of yours a couple of years ago, and he called and said, hey, look, you're looking to sell your business. And he gave me a number that you wanted. And I thought, okay, well, let's see what happens. Took a look at your numbers, knew you, had a good history from Darren about you. And we kind of overshot that number a little bit. It took a while, but we did it. And I want to talk about that process here today. I want to talk about your background, your history, the type of person you are, and the things that you've achieved in spite of your upbringing and the challenges that you've overcome. And I'm going to dig a little deep, and I hope you don't mind.
Uh-oh.
Because I think it's
all
great
right.
Lessons. So,
all right.
With that, why don't you tell the people listening a little bit about yourself, where you're from, all that big story there.
All right. Very brief story. I'm original from Holland, the Netherlands. I have a big accent. So, but it came to the United States 9 years ago. Now live in the Bay Area, close to San Francisco. Always have been an entrepreneur before. I always say before entrepreneurship was a trend, even back home, from construction companies to promoting parties to selling piñatas online, to running, bootstrapping a site about soap operas of all topics. And
you seem like a big soap opera guy. You're really into them, right? I mean, just
yes.
the passion that you followed.
Yeah, because, you know, I have zero to do between 12 and 4 o'clock afternoon. No, and you know, I know we go on that later down the line, but I think it's a really cool, you know, a lot of people always say, you know, you have to really be passionate about the stuff that you sell or do. I have zero passion for soap operas, and, you know, it turned out to be probably, you know, the biggest exit I have so far.
Yeah. And clearly, folks, I'm being sarcastic about that because it's an ongoing joke that Ramon has never watched a single full soap opera in his entire life. Are you going to go to your grave someday never watching a soap opera? Or do you think you might sit down one afternoon and just watch an episode of Days of Our Lives or General Hospital or whatever's airing these days? Just one?
The problem is it's okay. So the show is 1 hour long. Of that 1 hour, it's 30 minutes commercials. And all that 30 minutes, it's just very painful to watch. I'm sorry, soap opera lovers. It's just not really my cup of tea. I never spoke, you know, said it out loud because I didn't want to offend, you know, my audience. But it's, yeah.
These are words from a guy that had millions and millions of people visiting his website and YouTube channel every single day, and he never watched a single full soap opera. All right, we're going to get into that a little bit. So as I said, for those listening, he would not go deep enough, so we're going to go a little deeper. You moved here from Holland 9 years ago. Let's talk a little bit about your upbringing so that people that I think have had some challenges in life and are hoping to do what you've done can hear your story. You at one point in your life were homeless, correct?
Well,
briefly.
I think, Well, it was more the fact that my age was very young, but yeah, I had to have slept on the streets. Not really on the streets. Like, I don't want to make sound too dramatic.
I did it for you. I started off with that question. So at the age of 12, you had to spend a few nights on the street at the age of 12, and then friends, couches, and then eventually worked it out. And did you move back in with your dad or did you stay with friends from 12 to 15?
Well, yeah, not to make it too long of a story. My parents were separated. My mom, eventually, I was living with my mom. Eventually, she was not able to take care of me anymore. So I had to move to my father's house. And he basically just, you know, kicked me out on the street when I was 12. You know, he had a lot of issues with alcoholism and a lot of other issues. So I was, you know, first couple of days on the street, then at some friends' houses. And then one of the parents of one of the friends I was staying at tracked down my mom, and my mom took me back in, but was, you know, actually not in a state of mind to raise a child, but there was no other way around it. So, yeah.
And I've made you very uncomfortable in the first 5 minutes of this interview.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
I do it because honestly, every time I talk to you and I hear your story, I'm blown away with what you've achieved. I think there must be something just ingrained in your DNA that made you believe that you were going to be a success in life. Is that sort of, you always kind of knew you were going to go off and on your own and overcome these challenges that so many would just give up on and go down a terrible different path? Did you have a belief in yourself and that you were going to be a success or an entrepreneur even at a young age?
Yeah, not every day. I think it's, you know, but in the big picture, I always believe that one day somehow I will be successful. Always had that entrepreneurial spirit in me. I was not good at school. In that same phase of, you know, the stuff that happened at home, you know, I got kicked out of some high schools and, you know, eventually just stopped going to school when I was 15, you know, because, yeah. And started, you know, doing stuff for myself, like as a business owner. So I always knew that, you know, with hard work and just being, you know, keep on going. Like, you know, I think the stuff that happened to me in the past actually helped me. right? Like, I almost now have a mentality that, you know, I survived all that stuff back then. So the things that I'm dealing right now is actually nothing compared to back then, if that makes sense.
No, it's certainly made you who you are today and a better person for it. For those listening, just to get the full picture, we just sold Ramon's business for just shy of $9 million. It's the second business that we've sold for Ramon through Quiet Life Brokerage. And he's a serial entrepreneur. And I think you said to me a couple of weeks ago, Ramon, that just 2 or 3 years ago, you could not get someone to give you or invest $8,000 in you. And now there are people coming out of the woodworks to give you money to invest and buy businesses on their behalf, which you're not doing. You're using your own for the most part. But when you have such a big success like this, you're looked at very, very differently. And you've done some incredible things. And on top of it all, you're a good person, which makes a big difference. And the buyer saw that. And I talked to him yesterday, and he repeated that several times during my interview with him. Now, first off, for the children listening, if there are any young entrepreneurs, don't quit school. Just because Ramon did, and he sold his business for nearly eight figures, don't quit school. Stay there, please.
Stay there, because look at, because I'm 37 now, right? So this is 20 years in the making. You know, it's not that, yeah, I started this soap opera website 3 years ago. So some will say, you know, yeah, you became, you know, you went from zero to 100 in 3 years, but I see it actually, it took me 20 plus years to get this, right? So it's not the smart, it's not the easiest, it's not the smartest way to go about. The more and more now that I'm, you know, especially the last year, and I got to know a lot of other super successful entrepreneurs, it's that networking and connections is so important. So if you are in a school, you will get all these connections and relationships with really key people that are going to be key people in your life. And yeah. I had to do it the other way around.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something that you and I saw at the Brand Builder Summit and the other events that you and I both go to is the connections with the people that are attending those events and the relationships that you build and the masterminds that you join, sharing ideas. Everybody has a different experience. Everybody has a different level of expertise on different things. And for the most part, they're willing to share, unless you're a direct competitor, which is really, it's such a vast marketplace selling, you know, doing content sites like you do, which is your niche and your level of expertise versus, you know, even a physical product site like Moise. He, great success, huge story, willing to talk to you about, you know, tax liabilities and things of that nature that you have to deal with now, a very good problem that you have to focus on. So let's back up a little bit. Let's focus in on your niche and your specialty. I think you've looked at now a number of different niches now that you've sold your largest business content advertising site in the soap opera niche. You had considered building a portfolio in either physical products or SaaS or content sites and advertising sites. Have you narrowed down where you're going to focus on now for the future?
No, still not. So my dream is, so to speak, building a small, you know, I call it like a private equity model, where we have a small team, an in-house team, where we can start or acquire or buy, you know, a stake into an existing company, because we, you know, our background is content and driving traffic, sales, or viewers, eyeballs through content. And so using that strategy to either push sales for a SaaS product or for an e-commerce or for content. But yeah, you and I have been going back and forth. Like, I do think I need to specialize in one, you know, niche, and every, you know, e-commerce has its pros and cons, and so SaaS, and so is content. And like you've mentioned, you know, to me many times before, like, the grass is always greener. You know, you hear stories of the success stories of people, you know, selling their e-commerce business for $100 million. But that's A, not easy to do. And there's a lot of, you know, the downsides of running an e-commerce. And the same goes for content. And also with SaaS. So I'm now taking the time to, you know, talk with as many people as possible and do research and then, yeah, go from there.
So let's talk about SoapHub and the site that you sold.
Okay.
We don't have to get into too much in terms of specifics, but I want to talk about the path so that business owners, sellers out there understand what an emotional roller coaster it can be.
Yeah.
We listed the business for sale in, I think it was February of this year. We had multiple offers. We listed it, I believe, at $5 million and came pretty close to asking price and put it under a letter of intent. I was driving home from Georgia, probably, I don't know, 20, 30 days into due diligence, moving along very well. The buyer was very happy, flew out there to see you, and things were going extremely well. And you called me on a Saturday afternoon. Can you recount that conversation for the people that are listening?
Yeah. And I feel still, I still feel bad about that. So, you know, the picture is SoapHub was doing really well already, not just revenue-wise, but profit-wise. And between the time that, you know, you sit down with Quiet Light and, you know, come up with a valuation and an asking price until that time, you know, there's time goes by. Like, I think we spoke first in December was the first initial, you know, and now we were 3 months past and literally the revenue and profit of SoapHub was skyrocketing. And it took me, you know, a while to, okay, what should I do here? Should I, you know, keep going with this process and with this buyer that was on the LOI with me? Or should I just say, you know what, let's hold off for a couple months and increase, you know, the 12-month trailing, right? Because most businesses or all businesses that go through brokers, the valuation is based on a multiple of the last 12 months of profit. So the more months of higher profit you can show, the higher the valuation. But yeah, on that Saturday, I also remember I was nervous. I didn't want to call you, but I thought that's, you know, when you're dealing with such a big event, this is a life-changing event for me, not just for me, but also my family, my mom, my dad, my son, you know, everybody involved and the employees. I thought I had to do it. So I had to call you up and say, Joe, I'm really sorry, but I think it's best for us to take the listing down for now and then relist it in 4, 5, 6 months.
You're having as much trouble telling, say, just recounting the story as you did the day you called me on that Saturday is kind of,
I know.
You still feel bad about it. I knew when that call came through on a Saturday, I thought, okay, this can't be good. Ramon's calling me on a Saturday afternoon. That's really odd. And I knew it was going to be a tough phone call. So you had recounted that, you know, basically we went through the numbers on the call and you had said, look, just, I got to think about my family. This could be this is a lifetime event sale and the business has grown so much that this initial, I think we're at a 4x multiple now is dropping so low that you feel like you're giving the business away. And I think you and I went through the numbers and we said, all right, look, if we wait another 6 months, even if we just held the same multiple, we'd be at a valuation at around $7.5-8 million. The goal at the end of that phone call was just to step back, run the numbers, talk on Monday, and then break the bad news to the buyer if we needed to. And we did that. And it was hard and he felt bad. He felt he was very upset because it was a great opportunity. So we pulled it back and we were going to just wait, right? We were going to take the listing down, wait another 6 months and let it pass. We updated the financials just as a recounting of the story. The numbers jumped tremendously and we reached out to the backup buyers based upon the conversations you and I had. We said, all right, well, at the very least, we've got to tell the current buyer the situation and what we're going to do in 6 months or so. And then, of course, two other backup buyers were constantly reaching out to me and said, if anything changes, please reach out. So we pulled out of that LOI. It was a non-binding letter of intent. And we backed out of that and ended up having multiple offers push the value of the business up well in advance of that 6 month period, because we ended up closing well before that time ended. Was that an easy process? You know, a lot of
a lot of sellers think, oh, I want multiple offers. Oh, I want to be in a situation where it's getting bid up over asking price. Was that an easy process for you? Was it comfortable, no stress, really easy to go through, or was it emotional?
It was super emotional because you have multiple offers that most of the time are not identical. They're a little bit different. And you also have to think, okay, who is this buyer? Of course, you're talking on the phone a couple times, but you have to think about, okay, who is most likely to close? Because it's one thing to make an offer and, you know, sign an LOI, but it not everyone will be able to close. And then if the buyer at the last minute is not able to close, then you lose 2 months of work, due diligence periods, and also lose that momentum where there are, you know, several buyers out trying to outbid them. You know, you have that momentum going that you are getting more over your asking price. But if you have to go back, you know, after 2 months, then you kind of lost that momentum. So yeah, it was a very tough decision because especially the two top, you know, offers were from two buyers that I would like to work with them, you know, both of them, yeah, right? So it was a difficult decision.
Yeah, actually, all three buyers were highly qualified, a heck of a lot smarter than I am, and brought a really good offer to the table. The difference for those buyers out there that are listening, when you're in a multiple offer situation, the difference for the one buyer that ended up eventually buying the business was that he had some investors behind him and he brought them to the conference call, Ramon, right? So we got to not only speak to the buyer itself, but the money behind the buyer, we got to have conversations with as well. Did that make a big difference for you?
Yeah, definitely. Because that gave me confidence that this buyer is most likely to close and also close faster. People that are more experienced, you know, it's more easier to work with. And so as a seller's point of view, because I've been sitting on both sides of the table, as a seller's point of view, yes, of course, you look at the money, at the, you know, the offer, the money, you know, amount of money first. But, you know, you also look at, okay, who is the buyer? Because you're going to have to work with this person for quite some time. You know, how is he financing? Is this person, you know, being able to close, you know, this kind of transaction? So if you are in the race to buy something, you know, try to also make sure that the seller knows that, you know, yeah, if the seller goes with you, that you're, you know, ready to close and you're able to close and you have experience and it will be a smooth transaction.
So we were going to close in, I think it was going to be 30 to 45 days. There was investor money behind it. And we were marching along doing very well. And then it fell apart again, right? You pulled out of one LOI, yes, and then the money behind our buyer disappeared. It was a family fund. For those listening, it was a family fund. And the two people that came forward and were on the call with Ramon and the buyers were fantastic, are still fantastic. And I would still work with them if they came forward to buy a business from Quiet Light with either this buyer or another. But the general manager of the family fund made a decision that he never makes. And he said, soap operas? No, I don't think so. Kill that deal. Just like that, it was gone. And did you call me and let's say vent? Did you vent to me on the phone shortly thereafter? Out of stress and emotion, or you said that you've yelled at me a few times, but I call it venting. How were you feeling? How were you feeling when that fell apart quickly? And we put it back together, obviously, because we're having this conversation today. But I mean, what was going through your mind when you were literally, I think probably what, 2 weeks away from closing, you know, this transaction and having an enormous amount of money deposited to your account and life-changing money for you and your family? How were you feeling that day?
Well, it was two ways. Like, of course, I was disappointed because we put a lot of work into it. We were literally 2 weeks out. right? So not only me, but the whole team, everybody involved, we moved all our lives around that magic closing date of, in my case, it was June 30, I believe, or something like that, right? Like, it was the end of that month. We were 2 weeks out. And yeah, then the deal fell through. So it was just more like, man, we worked so hard. We were so close. And now it falls through. And it shows that there's so many moving parts. And in my case, or in this case, everybody involved wanted to get this deal done, but still, you know, something small happened and out of everybody's control, and that made the deal fell through. Right. So there's so many moving parts in order to close a deal like this that, yeah, everything has to fall in place.
It was tough.
And more also that a lot of the employees, they get profit shares of the sale, and you know, they were already in their minds shopping around, you know, and I felt really bad to break the news to them. So because all this time leading up to it was like, okay guys, we're almost there, a couple more weeks, you know, let's keep the hard work going and stuff like that. And then I had to break the news like, oh, sorry guys, we have to move it up again. But I did was, you know, I knew that eventually we'll be able to sell because it's a great website that it's, yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. It fell apart for the strangest reason. One, because it was growing so fast. You made a very tough, but obviously financially intelligent decision. And you took a little bit of a risk, but you pulled back and said, this is growing so, so fast. And we're not talking about 10% month over month growth here, folks. We're talking, you know, 200, 300, 400% month over month growth. So it was an easy decision, yet tough on your part because you were, you know, disappointing the buyer and making a tough call to me. And then it fell apart. But we go back to the value of having multiple calls with buyers in advance of signing a letter of intent. Because this particular buyer, he really wanted the business and he had other sources of revenue or investors, and he pulled it off. He convinced you and I that he had another path that he'd been working on the whole time, hadn't gone down it out of respect for the other buyers, but as soon as they, other investors, as soon as they were out, he opened up that other path, went down it very quickly. You and I did the same thing again. We needed to jump on calls with other people to have them instill confidence in us that they could get the job done. You're right. It was June 30 was the initial close date with that buyer. And then I think it was near the third week of August where we ended up closing. So another 6 or 7 weeks. Does that sound about right? Okay. So the downside.
Those were the longest weeks of my life.
I know. But the downside is that they are the absolute longest weeks, days, hours of your lives. Boy, that does sound like a soap opera, Days of Our Lives.
Exactly.
But looking back, in the blink of an eye, it's gone. The time passed. And you benefited financially from that because you got to hold the business for another, let's call it 60 days, and got the profit from that business for another 60 days. It's almost like a bonus because you closed anyway. Was it worth the extra 45 days, 60 days that it took? Or do you wish that you went back and said, June 30th, I would have taken it all day long, even today, knowing what the end result is, closing, you know, 45, 60 days later? Would you do it all over again and close on June 30th?
That's a good question. Probably now, no, I would have taken the extra because it's, you know, we're talking about, you know, a lot of money, 2 months extra of profit, plus the buyer, you know, increased his offer a little bit as well. Right. When the deal fell through, he said, I'm working on other things. Just, you know, give me some more time. You know, I will be able to close it, but give me more time. And then he, you know, he increased his offer also a little bit. Now that everything fell, you know, exactly how it was supposed to be. Yeah. I would have taken the money, but it was a really good learning experience for me going into this. You know, I've sold a bunch of websites, bought and sold a bunch of websites, but way smaller, all in the, you know, not even close to this one. I think the most was like around 200,000 I sold. And then dealing with an asset purchase agreement, you know, you don't really deal with attorneys, you don't really deal with a lot of things that now came on my plate. And it was, you know, dealing not just with my own attorney, but then the other side's attorney. And it's just so many people are involved. And it was an emotional roller coaster. So I think now looking back, it's good because now it made me better for the next transactions, if that makes sense.
You know, most people would hang up their shoes and say, I'm done with your kind of a transaction and sale. But you're already focused on growing other businesses, buying other businesses and building a portfolio. So kudos to you. You're a young guy. You can do that. Yeah. What would you recommend to people that are listening that are in a position to sell their business for a lifetime event sale for them, whether that's $100,000, $500,000, $1 million, $5, $10 million, what are the most important things to consider as they begin that process and go down that road? Things that you've learned.
So the things I've learned and I did wrong, and you hammer on this in many podcasts, is clean books, people. I made a mistake of having, it was not on purpose. It was just out of laziness, I think, that I commingled different websites in one. So I had one LLC, one bank account, you know, one account with Google. The issue is that Google does not allow you to have multiple AdSense accounts. So even if you have 100 websites with AdSense tags on it, it all comes down in one Google account. But yeah, I bought different content sites in that last 3 years. I sold content sites. I, you know, invested in things all from that one bank account. So thankfully, we were able to make it work. But it was a lot of work on my end to really, I had to go back literally 3 years, and every transaction I had to, oh, well, this was for SoapHub. No, this was not for SoapHub. Yeah. And then whatever was not for SoapHub, I also had to be able to back it up with proof. Well, listen, this was for this, and here's the proof. And so it was a very tedious, long, stressful, you know, work with including my CPA and my bookkeeper. And thankfully, we were able to work it out. But I know for a fact in other cases that, you know, where people commingled and then they had really issues with the valuation. They were not able to get the top dollar because, you know, the buyers were not able to really dissect what is the really profit of that company. So that's, learn it from me. I did learn it the hard way. So now I've set up different companies, different LLCs, and run, you know, everything as clean as possible.
Okay.
So that's one. Second is read on asset purchase agreements. The first time, you know, when an asset purchase agreement got sent to me, it was so complicated for me. I didn't know what to look for. What do we have to be in it? And then whatever my attorney, you know, advised me, I basically say, yeah, well, makes sense. Why not? You know, so the notes of my attorney, I just lately copied and then, you know, send that to the buyer and said, you know, this is what I want to change in the asset purchase agreement. And then the buyer's attorney, they came back with their notes and then went back and forth. I think now looking backwards, now I kind of know what is important. I think attorneys try to, you know, and I understand the reason, but they try to overprotect their client. So my attorney tried to overprotect me, buyer's attorney tried to overprotect them. And somehow we have to find a middle. There are tons of examples where attorneys ruined the deal. You probably will have a lot of stories of that. So I think it's good if you kind of get advice from people, learn, read upon it on the online and see what is really needed and what not. So now, you know, I'm working on the deal right now with a great attorney, but now I'm more experienced and I can say, well, this is what I don't want in the attorney. I understand why you advise me that, but it's not needed. I've done it before. This is not needed. And let's just keep it, you know, as simple as possible. Because yeah, attorneys can ruin deals. Those are the two biggest advices.
Well, I can agree with you on the attorney part wholeheartedly. I've been in situations where a relative of the seller completely killed the deal. I had a deal where the young guy just out of graduate school, and he had a great business that he started as undergrad and literally graduating from graduate school, about to start his professional career. And we've got a business that was under contract for $750,000, way over the standard valuation. But there was a problem. The problem was that his mother and father were both attorneys, and his wife was a law student. And they took that asset purchase agreement, shredded it, and fought tooth and nail for the tiniest, tiniest little thing, and were completely unreasonable to the point where the buyer, who honestly was very reasonable, walked away, threw their hands up in frustration. At the Brand Builder Summit, you and I attended in Austin a few weeks ago, Richard Jalatranda from One-on-One Commerce got up, and you know, he's bought three businesses from Quiet Light in the last 6 months, eight in all, and their goal is to buy 101, hence One-on-One Commerce. They've gotten enough experience where they are going to say, look, you can only work with this group of attorneys. There's no conflicts. Attorneys can't have conflicts with us and our legal team. But these attorneys understand e-commerce and contract negotiations. You got to work with one of those. It's almost, you've got to have a contract attorney that understands fairness and balance, and that it has to be a good deal and a good transaction for both sides. So I agree, 110% on both of those points.
Well, just to piggyback off that, it also when you're going to look for an attorney, make sure this attorney not only has experience in the internet space, but also the niche where you are, because an e-commerce deal is totally different than an asset, a content site where you're just buying an asset or a SaaS. Right. So also try, if you go out there and try to find an attorney that can assist you with the asset purchase agreements, is see if they have experience in not just internet marketing, but also the niche.
Okay. So overall, the moral here is that when you're selling your business, it can happen very quickly. We put it under contract very quickly, and we could have been through the entire process from listing it to closing inside of 60 days, 75 days tops the first time around. But you made the tough decision to pull back because the growth was astronomical. You made a good decision, ended up almost doubling your value. And that's a pretty huge number when it comes down to it. And not only that, you made a lot more money along the way because you still held onto a great business that was doing great numbers and growing. There were times where it was tough, and we collectively said, look, there are multiple options here, and one of them is to stop this process, hold your business, take care of your family, take care of your staff, hold the business and keep running it. It got that frustrating at times and that emotional at times because it is a big deal to sell a business of this size. And again, it's actually a big deal to sell a business, whether it's 100,000, 500,000, a million, or 10 million, it doesn't matter. It does get emotional. I think the number one thing that people need to look for an advisor is one that will set realistic expectations and that can manage emotions, and not just their own, but those of the buyer and those of the seller. And sometimes the third parties that are involved, if they're investors involved as well. Because no matter what, most of these deals go slightly off the rails, and it's our job to get them back on. But I couldn't have done it without you, Ramon. You've been fantastic. You've set some new goals in life, though. So I want to kind of wrap up with this. You and I had a conversation just so people understand a little bit more about who you are and what you've accomplished and what you're going to do in the future. You had a goal to help a certain number of people be successful in life based upon the goodness that you've received, I think. Am I somewhere along the ballpark? Can you touch on that just briefly, if you're comfortable enough sharing that?
Yes.
Am I embarrassing
everything
you,
I told
way?
You? everything I told you, you're using against me, Joe. No, I'm just kidding.
Not quite everything.
I just, as you might know, like, I don't really like to be in the spotlight. You know, I never really do podcasts, or, you know, I made one exception for a news outlet to do it. But yes, so because I'm very entrepreneurial, you know, I think it's almost it's your duty, so to speak, that when you're quote unquote, you know, get to a level, that you have to give back and help other people. And but you can help, you know, the millions of ways you how you can help other people. I think for me is that I want to help people. Like I see that I was blessed to achieve the American dream, so to speak. And I want to help achieve other people to do that as well. And I have a number in my mind. I want to help 500 people, not just by, you know, helping, oh, here's, you know, here you can pay a year for school or something. No, helping to change really their lives, how my life was changed. You know, like 3-4 years ago, I was really literally going from paycheck to paycheck and, you know, not knowing, you know, where, you know, how next month is going to look like. And, you know, 3 years ago, and now 3 years later, I'm in this position. So change can really happen. And I want to help 500 people by, if they have a business idea, by, you know, funding their ideas and helping them, you know, starting their businesses. Or, you know, maybe I am able to acquire a business and then, you know, have somebody run that for me. Stuff like that. So it's more or less helping 500 people in achieving the American dream by starting their business or helping them grow their business.
Do you write down these goals? I think in talking with Ben the other day, when he said he came to visit you in your office, that you had some stuff on a whiteboard, and he looked up and he said, "Man, just incredible goals that you've set." And he said it'd be foolish for anybody to bet against you. Do you write these down on a whiteboard? Do you just think about them in your head? Do you hear about, you know, goal setting? What's your process?
Yeah, so I write them down actually because I'm about to move. Today I'm at the house office, and because I'm packing, I'm moving next week. But I have notes almost everywhere of my goals. So for some weird reason, I believe in visualization. And so when I wanted to, you know, buy a specific house, that was my dream, I would print out, you know, pictures of my quote unquote dream house, and I will just pin them everywhere. But I have a list of life goals, so to speak. And yeah, I've printed that, and that's in my office and at the house.
Amazing. Ramon, it has been a complete pleasure working with you for the last 8 months. For those listening, we've got somebody that overcame some pretty serious challenges in life, has been an entrepreneur for 20 years, even up for the, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, as he said, living paycheck to paycheck, buckled down, worked hard. As my baseball coach used to say, and I was not very good, he always used to say, the harder you work, the luckier you'll get. And I think Ramon worked very hard, visualized those goals, wrote them down, put them up on the board, and has achieved them. Made some tough decisions along the way. It was not easy, I can tell you that now. Some of it was quite emotional, but it worked out in the end. Ramon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your story with me and with the audience of the Quiet Life Podcast. You're a good man. I look forward to doing business with you for years to come.
Same here. So thanks a lot.
You bet. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.